Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest, Kristen Zeiman. Kristen is the retired police chief from Aurora, Illinois, where prior to her retirement, she led the response to an active shooting situation in 2019. She also was charged with leading her department, and in many ways her community, through the pandemic. Kristen currently capitalizes on her wealth of experience to serve as a consultant and a speaker in both the public and private sector. She works with law enforcement agencies and private sector companies to help them evolve their leadership practices and approaches and develop optimal organizational cultures. Kristen is committed to building the future of law enforcement, and she is author of the book, Reimagining Blue. And I'm super excited to share this conversation with you today. Kristen is going to go in many different directions and share lots of lessons and experiences that she's learned, not only from dealing with tragedy, but from building her brand as a leader and being so successful in many different environments. Of the many topics we're going to talk about, we're going to start by talking about why it is so important to prepare for the worst thing that could happen. Why it's important to trust people and their expertise, how to stop tripping over red flags in our personal and professional lives, and why the best idea should always win, regardless of who it comes from. It's a great conversation. I'm so thankful Kristen shared her time with us, and I'm very happy to share the conversation with you all today. Thank you all so much for continuing to share your time and be here week after week to listen to these conversations. We truly appreciate it. Before we jump in, let's thank our sponsors real quick. First, we have HumanTel. For anybody that's ever been interested in developing the skill set necessary to recognize when someone's emotions are changing, based on evaluating their facial expressions and nonverbal communication, I highly recommend you head over to humantel.com. Read their research, read their blogs, explore their training, choose the online self-paced training that's best for you. And when you do, enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off the training of your choice. I've done it. I highly recommend it. Head over to humantel.com. For the professional interviewers, please head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you will learn all you need to know about the International Association of Interviewers. What does it take to qualify as an individual or as an organization? What are the benefits, the educational opportunities, chances to participate and lead your own programs, networking, so much more? All of those questions are answered at certifiedinterviewer.com. That's also where you can learn about the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. Who qualifies? What does it take to prepare for? How do you take the exam? What can earning the designation mean for you and your career moving forward? Get all those questions answered at certifiedinterviewer.com. And finally, while you're online, please head over to inquasive.com. That's where you will learn more about the programs our clients ask us to customize for their leadership teams, their sales teams, and their HR teams, to teach them the strategic observation and persuasive communication skills necessary to encourage people to share the everyday confessions that unlock the truth and often surprising alternatives in our everyday conversations. Once again, thank you all for being here today. We truly appreciate it. So without further ado, I introduce to you Kristen Zeiman. Good morning, Kristen. It is so great to see you. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thanks for having me, Michael. I am stoked to talk with you.
Oh, my pleasure. So for a little bit of context, if people were interested, I had the opportunity to see you speak at an event out in Chicago a couple of months ago now. Maybe I'm really no good at telling time or keeping track anymore. And I really enjoyed your session. And I'm thankful that you have the opportunity to dive a little bit deeper and have more of a conversation about some of the things that you talked about that day. And really early in that session, you said something that grabbed my attention and hit on one of my biases, preferences, whatever word that you want to talk about. And obviously, to the degree that you want to share anything about your experiences, feel free. But one of the things that you talked about right away was how important it is not just to be aware of what the worst case might be, but to have a plan for it. Not just in law enforcement, but in business and in life as well. And if you're okay with it, I would love to important to acknowledge and prepare for what might be the worst case scenario.
Yeah, I always start off my presentations, quite frankly, trying to scare people. I joke that I'm really fun at parties, but I'm constantly looking for the worst thing that could possibly happen, right? And that's where preparation comes from. That's the foundation of preparedness. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. I just happen to be in law enforcement, where when we think of the worst thing that could happen, you know, it's usually bloodshed, right? Lost lives. But it doesn't matter, you know, whatever industry you're in, profession, you know, your corporation, your business, what have you. You always need to be thinking about the worst possible thing that could happen. And sometimes people think that I'm inviting, you know, bad luck into the universe by sitting with that. But I think very contrarily. And the reason being is that we have to prepare ourselves. And, you know, one of the interesting things that I talk about is that we're constantly preparing for what has already happened. We study events that have happened. If you're in corporate America, you could look at, let's use COVID as an example. And that was something that in our lifetime came out of nowhere. It wasn't the known and the repeated. We've been through recessions before. We know, how to navigate those turbulent times. And so we have to not only study the things that have happened, whether it was to us or to someone else, so that we can be prepared when it comes to our doorstep. But we also have to use our imagination. And that's the tough part, is thinking of the thing that hasn't happened yet, because the world is dominated by the known and the repeated. And we spend a lot of our time there, but things happen all the time that have never happened before. And so regardless of what industry you're in, you need to invite that conversation in your organizations. And that means, you know, I use the analogy of, you know, we don't need to talk about, you know, the fruit that's bearing all the time. We can talk about the great things that are happening, but we also need to look at our people and say, what are our threats? What is looming and what could potentially take us down? And then we work through that either in tabletops or policy or bringing in subject matter experts. But it's important, and this is where culture becomes the most important thing in our organizations, is you have to start the conversation. What is the worst thing that could possibly happen?
And to hear you talk about it, it makes so much sense. But so many people just avoid it. Either they don't want to think about it, or it's uncomfortable, or maybe they feel safer than they should, or they can't use their imagination for whatever those things are. But even if we take it away from law enforcement examples of crisis and kind of into the business world just for a moment, it's really hard to make decisions under stress. Once stress takes over our brain, it's really hard to make decisions. So if we can make the decisions before the stressful event occurs, now we're likely acting in better faith, we're making sound decisions, we're executing on a plan that's already in place, we're decreasing latency from the time the problem happens to the time we actually are able to respond and take action. And all of that happened because people were willing to do what you were talking about now, which is begin to plan for the worst case scenario. Hopefully it never happens, but even if something sort of similar happens, you've got a plan in place.
Yeah. And I want to pull on a thread that you just said there, because there's a lot of keynotes that I deliver on this very subject of preparedness. And I'll get people that come up to me and say, man, you know, I wish my leadership was here because we're not having these conversations. And it's really easy to get bogged down with the fires that you have to put out every day, the meetings that you have to attend, and the everyday business at hand absolutely takes up your schedule. But you have to read here, have to underscore, build in time to talk about the thing that is looming. And then you mentioned, you know, being ready for when that thing comes. You're never going to perfectly plan out or carve out that policy or, you know, that tabletop that is going to fit perfectly with the crisis. We all understand that conceptually. But what you're building when you talk about these and when you identify the worst possible thing that could happen is you're building in structures of, as you mentioned, that now we're problem solving in the moment. So then when the defecation hits the oscillation, you've gone through a problem-solving mode. So even if it's different than you sat down and anticipated, Now you're in that problem solving mode and you've been there and you can better pivot, you can bend without breaking. So it is absolutely pertinent that every leader of their organization confronts this, and you would be surprised how many people do not.
Unfortunately, I probably wouldn't be surprised at this point because like you, I've had the conversations and I've been in the room when I've watched people rationalize or explain away or make the assumptions, but it's so true. And I feel like at any level of the organization, everybody is a problem solver. That's why they're there. And the higher we are in the organization, the bigger the problems are to solve and the more ambiguity we have to work with to solve those problems. So the sooner we can try to have some sort of, I like how you said, building in structure. Maybe I don't have the perfect plan. Maybe I don't have every step to the dance down. But if I've got a really good idea what I need to do first and what my outcome is, well, some of those steps in the middle, I can figure out because I already have at least the concept, the structure, the goals in place.
Absolutely. And right there is the key. It was the author of Atomic Habits, James Clear, that said, we do not rise to the level of our goals. We fall to the level of our processes, right? So when we look at the goal, the end in mind is to come through the storm, whatever storm that may be. It may be literal. I live in South Florida, so you know hurricanes are trying to kill us all the time. So whether it be a natural disaster, whether it be a mass shooting, whether it be something that threatens your business and the bottom line and the people of your business, you know, you have to think about those things and then build in processes, which is the training, which is the conversation. All of those processes lead to, you know, really answering the call when you are figuratively tapped on the shoulder and asked to do something. One thing that I want to really hit hard with leaders, when I hear, you know, people say, gosh, I just can't get my leaders on board. The way that if you're listening and you are a leader of the organization and you have not had these conversations or built these contingency plans, I want to remind you that you're going to be the face of the crisis. You're going to have to face your stakeholders. You're going to have to stand at that podium. You're going to have to stand at that shareholders meeting, stand in front of your people or even the community, depending on what your infrastructure looks like. And everyone will be looking at you and they will be asking, how did we miss this? How did we not know that this was looming in on the horizon? So I put that pressure on you very purposefully.
So now you're scaring us and you're putting
That's
pressure
right.
on us. I'm starting
That's
to regret
right.
this conversation.
That's
maybe.
What I'm here for.
You talk about being the face of a crisis. And although you've made so much from the crisis that you were the face of, I certainly don't want to underscore that you were one of the faces, if not the face of a very serious crisis that happened back in Illinois several years ago. So I don't necessarily want to dive into the details of that because it's not my story to tell. And I always try to be very sensitive with people who have been through those experiences. I don't get to narrate them for them. But one of the things that I picked up on from your presentation when I listened to you talk about it was the leadership in the moment and leading people through something that was incredibly dynamic, tragic, traumatizing, like all of these things that were happening at the same place at the same time. So when you talk about being the face of a crisis, I'd like to ask you something that sort of precedes the crisis. Mm-hmm. How can leaders, business, law enforcement, family, doesn't matter, how can leaders earn the trust from their people before the crisis starts so they can be more effective with their decision-making and communication if and when the crisis hits?
Yeah. And I'll use my incident in my city. We had a mass shooting. 5 people were killed and 5 of my police officers were shot trying to stop the bad guy from shooting. And to answer your question, it's kind of interesting because it's a little bit paradoxical here in that leadership is over glorified. And the reason I say that is because it's about trusting your people. What people want from you the most is autonomy. Autonomy motivates people. And autonomy is just another word for trust. It means relinquishing control. The reason that my department performed so well on this day was because it wasn't because of me. The only thing that I will take credit for is asking the question, which was, are we prepared for the worst thing that could possibly happen? And my SWAT commander and SWAT lieutenant looked at me and said, no, we are not. We are lacking training. We are lacking equipment. We are lacking you name it, you know, and they went down a list of things. My job then as the leader is to give the resources to remove the barriers so that we can get prepared. Now, fortunately, that conversation happened several years before the incident happened, before it unfolded. So the credit goes to those who were able to speak truth to power and say, no, we're not ready. And then what I did is I let the experts take over. I let them tell me, my SWAT commander, tell me what we need and, you know, just teach me a little bit about whatever it is. I'm not on the tactical trajectory in my career. You are. So you need to educate me so that I can go back to city council and get you the things that you need, right? And so, you know, to answer your question very succinctly is building trust is genuinely about giving it away. You know, by saying, I trust you to do the thing that I have put you in this position to do. And in doing so, that builds leadership. And on that particular day, everyone stepped up and performed in the way that they were trained to do. My job was to manage resources. Their job was to run towards the gunfire. And they are the true heroes. And now after the fact, I simply tell their story, but it is about building trust. And the only way that you can build trust is by trusting others to do their jobs.
And I think there is something there that is more unique than it should be that you probably do need to give yourself credit for as part of it, not just credit for asking the question well in advance, but giving yourself credit for giving people the opportunity to speak truth to power. A lot of leaders either don't, or they fool themselves into thinking that they do without realizing that they either shoot down most of the ideas they get, or they tell people why they're wrong, or they correct them, or sometimes even they're oblivious to the fact that if you give me an idea, I ask you for a solution and you give it to me. And then I say, well, that's a great idea. That's exactly what I was thinking. I just stole it from you. It's now no longer you came up with a great idea. It's you managed to win the trivia game and guess what I already had in mind. So for you to actually, in that scenario, give people the opportunity, the confidence, the trust that they could speak the truth to you, I think there's a lot of credit that's deserved there. And recency and geographic bias aside, or no, involved, not aside, involved. I recently had a conversation with Harry Kramer, who's a professor up in Northwestern, which was a couple stone throws away from where you were in Aurora. And one of the things that he talks about is as leaders, it's so important to be aware of what you don't know and surround yourself with people who know it. And to tie his conversation as a former CEO and college professor into your conversation as a former chief of police, like how many different angles do we need to hear this from before people accept it as fact and start doing it? So please, I in the future, give yourself credit for that.
Oh, no. And I appreciate that. And, you know, I want to pull on what you just said there. There's a phenomenon that I don't know if I made it up, but I like to think I did, but I may have heard it somewhere, but I'll take credit for it. But I call it the dog that does not bark. And I talk about it a lot. When your people stop coming to you with their ideas and with their criticisms, then when they stop coming to you, there's a reason they stop. One is because you get defensive as a leader. And we've all heard the quote, I've got an open door policy. And do we not, as followers, learn very quickly if that's bullshit or not? I don't know if I can curse, but I'm going to.
Do whatever you want.
And so we learn very quickly. And what a leader does is they either get defensive, or what I find even more typical is that people will say, hey, boss, you know, did you think about this? Or here's my idea. And it goes somewhere into the abyss. Never to engage. No feedback loop is provided. And so why do you think that people shut down and stop giving their thoughts and their opinions? Because it's not welcome. And that is the culture that we need to create to speak that truth to power. Because if you do not listen to your people, I promise you, they will become the dog that does not bark. And once that happens, you have lost them. You are losing value. And once apathy sets in, man, that is the disease that you need to fight more than anything. I would rather have someone come into my office pissed off about a decision or a lack of decision, because what does that mean? That means they still care. But the people who have checked out, they have run out of cares to give, right? And that is the biggest danger to your organization.
Like how you pivoted on that word choice the last
second. That's right. Yeah, I'm trying to be good here.
You got to work a lot harder than that to offend me, I promise. All great points. And now I'm laughing at the word choice and forgot the point that I was going to make after that. But all great word choices. And I'm going to have to move on. It'll come back to me. You made me laugh, but I appreciate that. In when I watched you give your presentation, one of the things that you talked about was the interdepartmental communications, whether it was with EMS, whether it was with fire, whether it was with other local agencies who were coming to support. I believe there might have been some federal folks that were around too that were trying to help out. I don't really recall. And I feel like we hear it a lot in law enforcement, and unfortunately we hear it after tragedies, right? Like one department wasn't talking to another and this could have been handled differently. But it happens in business every day. Marketing wasn't talking to sales. Production wasn't talking to design, QC. Like you hear it all the time. So I'm curious, from your experience, what did you learn from a cross-departmental communication standpoint in a crisis that we can all apply to our lives to help not only make that process more efficient, but more successful?
Oh, for sure. You know, get out of your damn silos. And this is what we do. We stay in our corner of the world. And using the example in law enforcement, you know, you've got your federal partners, they stay in their silo. And then, you know, it even happens, you know, within, you know, the organization, you know, you've got, you know, a certain department, you know, that kind of keeps and hoards all the information. And that entire system has to be disrupted, interrupted, blown up. And the reason is because we are all interdependent. When you think about the goal at hand and, you know, and the outcome, what potential successful outcome do you want? And then you ask yourself, who is involved in this? Who can help? What hands, you know, can reach in and assist in this? But there is it's a sticky little thing that really keeps us from doing that. And it's called ego, because we like to hoard information and we, you know, in the spotlight, whatever it may be. And when we let go of that BS, that's when we look at each other as interdependent, in that we are reliant upon one another for the successful outcome of whatever this is. So take corporate America, for example, and marketing and sales and, you know, accounting, all of the things. We have an end in mind. At least we should know what our mission and what our vision is. And so the question that we need to ask ourselves is, you know, who can help with this? And how about even, you know, we use some vulnerability as a leader to say, I need you. I need this team. And that is a collective way of seeing how we can, you know, manage the incident as it comes in, even if it's just day to day and, you know, and just making the widgets and selling the widgets. You know, who has got a hand in this? And I think the caution or the caveat that we run into is that everyone thinks they're more important than someone else. You know, it's like, you know, in law enforcement, well, SWAT team is elite, right? Well, I'll tell you what, the SWAT team was not the team that ran in there first. It was patrol level, line level police officers that got shot chasing a guy with a gun who just killed five people. So keep in mind, you know, this idea of, you know, we are the center of the universe, when truly it is every hand that it reaches in and what makes this the best and most successful outcome.
And I think your point about sharing information gets back to sharing trust and giving autonomy. Like the more information I hold, the more power I might feel like I have. But what am I going to do with that from a relational standpoint that helps me achieve the outcomes? And to hear you say that again, I feel like it reinforces an opportunity that so many people have. They don't think outcome first. And if they do think outcome first, it's an emotional outcome. What do I need to feel? What do I need to get off my to-do list right now? Not the strategic, long-term, true outcomes that they're working to achieve, almost said avoid. They shouldn't be avoiding them. They should be achieving them, that they're working to achieve. So having that outcome in mind, I think, is very important. Keeping the open communication, giving the information away, all great points that translate in law enforcement and business. And unfortunately, you proved it to be true in one of the worst case scenarios any of us would want to imagine.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I just think the key there is recognizing that everyone matters. Literally everyone in your organization matters, and not to overlook. And, you know, you said it earlier, the best idea always wins, no matter where that idea comes from. And the more people that you are engaging in your organization to say, hey, we've got a problem. I will bet that every single listener of this podcast has a challenge or a problem that they're facing in their organization. Have you thought about launching that problem, you know, and saying, hey, you know, let's put some eyes on this, because we have so many blind spots to the problem that we're trying to solve. And you would be surprised. And now we're going right back to trust and autonomy. You would be surprised how many people see it differently and have a potential solution, but we don't have the right people at the table. We're not asking the right questions, or worse, the people are at the table and they're not talking. Why? You need to figure that out. So best idea wins, and launch the problem and let people surprise you with their ingenuity and their creativity.
Oh, what a great way to say it. And again, that ties back to so many things that you've said throughout the conversation that are themes that continue to carry through, and are so very true. One of the things that my bias, again, that I believe in, you've talked about so many times, is teaching people to be problem solvers. And nothing that happened that day was a little thing. I don't want to act like any of it was. But in the course of kind of what you were presenting and the story you were telling and how you were turning it into leadership, and one of the things I really appreciated about your presentation is I've been to enough events where somebody gets on stage and tells a story. And it's, here's everything that happened that day. Or here is everything I did as part of this investigation or part of this situation. And it's story time. And now it's a compelling story, but the audience has to figure out, okay, well, what do I do with that? Because the odds of me being in that situation are, well, basically zero. Not that we couldn't be in that type of tragedy, but not as the chief of police leading in that type of tragedy. But what I really appreciated that you did throughout the entire time you had on stage was you kept tying it back to the lives and the careers and the situations that everybody in the room is in. And that's not something that I see a lot of people do in that context. So very well done. But one of the maybe not little things that jumped out to me was when people needed to get extracted, they couldn't get an ambulance in. So they just started throwing people in the back of police cars, SUVs, to get them out. And for me, when I think about problem solving, it's focused on what you do have, not what you don't have, and have the trust and the autonomy at hand to make the right decision for the right reasons, and sometimes accept the risk that goes with that. I'm going to put this guy in the back of an SUV and maybe his leg gets a little more broken, but guess what? Right. He's off the problem. Like, we can go get him somewhere else where he can get treated. So we talk about problem solving and thinking in the moment and autonomy. What are some of the other potentially surprising leadership lessons that you learned in a law enforcement context that people can apply in their business lives and their family lives and their community roles that they might not have thought through because they don't have your experience?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you brought this up, because there was another department. We did a full-on after action, brought in FEMA to give an objective review of how we handled the incident. And one thing that continued, the theme that continued to uncover over and over again, were people stood up and said, so I did this, I took control of this. And there was another department that attended the debriefing, and a guy walked up to me, and of course, I'm not going to mention the department, but he said, you know, we didn't get there in time to help you guys out, because we had to run it up the flagpole to, you know, to cross over jurisdictional lines to come assist. And this was then in juxtaposition with people from my department standing up and saying, so we didn't have a reunification site, so I just did it, man. I went over to the local university, set up a reunification site for, this happened at a warehouse, for the employees of the warehouse, because they were looking for their loved ones. Someone else set up something in our department. whose, you know, family members. And those are two examples of 50 of people that just did the damn thing that needed to be done in the moment, whether it was fit with their title. I had a 5-star chief from a neighboring community start moving squad cars from the middle of the road because they were blocking where ambos could get in. And he just did the thing. And so in our organizations, what we need to do is give people, we need to empower. Empower is the word here. And that empowerment comes with a little bit of risk, right? Because, you know, you brought up, maybe the leg's a little more broken, but I'll tell you what, throwing officers in the squad car saved lives that day. And the ER doctor himself told me that one of our officers was 3 minutes away from bleeding out because the bullet had nicked his femoral artery. And had we have followed protocol, which clearly states that you cannot transport any patients in a squad car. Had we have followed protocol, that officer would not be with us today. So people looked at protocol, and those are always the guidelines, but man, common sense prevails. You need to empower your people to make the decisions that are best for their people and for the department. You can talk about policy later, but there is a risk that is involved with that, but you have to assume that risk. And so that's where great leadership comes in, is to look at your people and say, I trust you, but you also have to train your people. You know, this is, we want autonomy and we want mastery, which means competence. So we need to have trained our people on how to problem solve in the moment. And so whatever industry you are in, you know, you get the people the training, and then this goes right back. We're circling back to trust, which seems to be the foundation of leadership, is trusting your people to make the right decisions. Now, after the fact, you can after action it, you can red card it, and you can say, okay, next time, you know, this is where we study, you know, what's happened. Next time, this is maybe a decision we shouldn't have made. But man, you cannot paralyze people, you know, and by not allowing them to make decisions in the moment that, again, are suited for the best possible outcome.
That word choice, paralyze, is perfect. I think we've all heard the phrase paralysis by analysis. Mm-hmm. What should I do? What will the consequences be? Am I going to be in trouble? Is this right? Is this wrong? You're presented with the problem. You have a good idea to solve it. You believe it's the best idea for the right reasons. Well, hopefully as leaders, we've put in the work ahead of time where we've built the trust. They know they can take risks. We're not going to kill them for making the best decision they thought mm-hmm. was available under adverse circumstances. All those things are so important. And a few minutes ago, when you were talking about having the right meet people at the table, and maybe they're not talking, or maybe they're not at the table, I feel like that ties into something else I heard you say. And when I heard you say it, I laughed in a very supportive way. Like I thought it was said perfectly, and I wish other people could hear it. Could you please walk us through what it means for people to trip over red flags?
Oh man, this is, you're speaking my language. This is the thing that, you know, I wake up in the morning and, you know, I'm on a mission to prevent the next, you know, act of mass violence. And the red flags that we're tripping over are just so obvious when you look at an incident and you can see it coming from a mile away. Using mass shootings as an example, you know, 99 out of 100 of these mass shootings that happen, when we connect the dots backwards, you know, we see, oh, wow, yeah, that individual was definitely going to carry out this threat, because there is a line, a path to shooting, to a shooter, to violence. And the path to violence starts with ideations. And then it is a research phase where they start to, you know, research other mass shootings. And there's a leakage phase where they tend to post it or they tend to tell someone. And then the final step is, and by the way, there's no specific timeline where you follow this. But then, you know, the key is then, do they come in contact with a weapon that can be used to harm? So you follow that path. And as we connect the dots backwards, in every single one of these cases, we say, oh yeah, we saw that coming. Or, you know, as we've seen as of late in the news, or the parents bought this troubled, you know, child, mentally unstable child, a gun, you know, or they went out and bought tons of ammunition, and, you know, we just, or they posted it somewhere, they told someone. So, you know, All of this to say is that there are red flags in our organizations as well. Ask your people. When something happens and you're not prepared for it, they'll probably say, yeah, we could have told you that. You know, we tried to warn someone that this is going to happen. And this is right back to why we have to ask the questions of all of our people. What am I missing? As your leader, as the CEO, as the person who is at the top of this organization chart, what are my blind spots? What is the thing that could take us down? Your people know what it is. Are you asking, you know, and is that door open for when they come to you and tell you? Because those red flags exist everywhere.
They certainly do. And I love how you, again, carried it from law enforcement into everyday business context. You lost a customer. You didn't win a sales agreement. Somebody quit. There was an accounting error. There was a problem with the software. Production couldn't meet the need.
Yep.
There were warning signs 99% of the time that somebody knew, that somebody saw, and they didn't feel valued. They didn't feel encouraged. They didn't feel like they had a place. One of the things that I learned as an investigator, which I think carries true to leaders, is we're always the last to know.
Yeah.
We're always the last. Like, as an investigator, it was funny. By the time somebody brought an investigation to me, they had tried to solve it at some other level, at least five other ways. Like, they were taking it to everybody they could before me because they didn't want to bring it to me and say, I've got this problem that we can't solve and now we need you to solve it. So I'm the last to know. And with leaders, the same thing. People are talking about it on the front line with the next level of management, with the next, they're taking it as high as they need, they think they need to, and no higher. So to your point, if we don't go out, what am I missing? What am I not seeing? Why might not this work? What are the three biggest obstacles that could cause this initiative to fail? It's just, you're never going to get the truth if you don't go looking for it.
Yeah. And when you are triaging something that goes wrong, as you said, we lost this major client. Why? You know, and then as you triage it and you determine, well, it was because this person, you know, didn't do precisely what they needed to do. And then you have people that knew that that was occurring, right? So then there's some sabotage taking place of like, well, we'll just watch them burn. Once again, forgetting that the outcome is yours collectively. But we get into these little petty grievances. Well, it's not my fault. It was their fault. When we need to think of it as everything affects us. It's this butterfly effect of the ripple, right? You know, and everything affects the outcome. And so that's where we put our egos aside. But when you triage it, you will see very clearly that there was a red flag there that someone knew about and either didn't run that flag up, you know, or they ignored it. And so it is just so apropos in law enforcement and in the world of investigation, communication, and all of business.
Something you just said reminded me of something I saw you say. Don't you have a line about like responsibility and fault or something like that? Like it might not be your fault, didn't I?
But you are responsible. So as a leader, it may not be your fault, but you are responsible. And that goes right back to you're the one standing at the podium. You're the one having to, you know, tell your stakeholders, wherever they may be, internal, external, why we lost this big client, why we didn't hit our numbers. You are the one. So it may not be your fault, but you are responsible. That is the crux of leadership. And that is why leadership is not for the faint of heart. That is why leadership is not just a title. It is truly a calling, and it bears great responsibility. And you have to take on that responsibility, not just when things go right. Of course, you get the glory because you're the one in charge. But man, when everything goes wrong, you know, you're responsible for everything, even if it wasn't your fault.
Because to some degree, there was a decision we could have made somewhere else. Yeah. And I feel like even if you talk a lot about after actioning and going back and working through, how do we learn? Yeah, the next problem might be different than this one, but the process we use to preempt it, solve it, deal with it, there's likely going to be a lot of commonalities there if we separate the process from the problem. But even if you go back and ask somebody, why didn't you tell me? Well, that's only going to motivate them not to tell you again. But if we can sit down with them and say, hey, clearly I've done something in the past that didn't make it feel safe for you to tell me, or didn't make you feel like I would listen if you told me. Put it on you, not you, Kristen, but the proverbial you. Put it on yourself. Like, what did I do to make it difficult for you to come to me?
This is big. This is big. I want to pause right here because I have a lot of experience in this arena. You know, I've worked for two administrations as the chief of police in my city, and two very different city leadership styles when the new mayor came in. And, you know, we had one that when something went wrong, it was whose head is going to roll for this. We're going to find out and we're going to punish them. So when things went wrong, no one wanted to speak up. We then have who is the current chief of staff in the city where I'm from and where I spent my 30 years in law enforcement, that when something goes wrong, doesn't care who or how it happened. It's okay, what are we going to do to fix it? And how do we move forward? At later, perhaps we can talk about, you know, what went wrong, or if it was a who, or if it was a system or a process, but it was no one was worried about coming forward and saying, oh man, we just got dealt the biggest shit sandwich. Here it is. And it wasn't, you know, whose fault is it? It was, okay, all right, let's get this sandwich, let's choke it down and let's figure out, you know, how we're going to work through this. So, you know, as leaders, we have to make sure that our people can come to us so that, you know, there people are going to make mistakes, man. This is the nature of being human. You know, there are going to be things that fall through the crack. But when we focus on how to fix it, you know, versus whose head's going to roll, you get a very different response from your people.
Amen. Solution before blame. If we ever even get to blame, but solution first.
Yeah.
I'd love to ask you a question that I forgot to ask your permission for before we started. So if you don't approve of it, please tell me. But one of the things that I'm curious to ask you is law enforcement is typically, for better or worse, a male-dominated field. Mm-hmm. And not only did you rise to a significant position of leadership, but you held it for quite a long time. You are immensely respected. That is very clear throughout the community. And you led the department, the city, the community through this tragedy and beyond after. I mean, we could have a whole nother conversation about how you had to work with people in the community and in your department to help them heal and recover and move on and all of that. And you shared some very powerful examples of that. But to the degree that I have the permission to ask and you are comfortable answering, what did you learn from being a female leader in a male-dominated field that other female leaders can learn from as well?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I learned was, for me, the most remedial lesson, the lesson that I had to learn over and over again, and that was vulnerability. And I have to say that I pushed that as far away as I could. I was raised by a Marine father. He was a cop. And he told me, don't you ever, ever let anyone see you cry. Don't ever let anyone see weakness in you. And I took that to heart. And I tried really hard to put on this facade of, you know, this tough guy. And the interesting part is that it wasn't anything close to who I am, because I'm really comfortable with looking at you and saying, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing right now. I had to do that during COVID. And that's, you know, one of the biggest times that I learned, you know, about being more vulnerable, you know, after the mass shooting, of course. But what I have learned is that it doesn't matter what your title or your position is, that there is nothing weak about asking for help. And I'll tell you what, man, the times that I looked at my people and said, guys, this one is bigger than me. I'm not sure what to do here. Best idea wins, right? Going right back to that concept. But the more that I was myself, and listen, there's a lot of competencies that I have, but there are a lot of things I don't know. And I think that's where leaders mistake. You know, this idea that vulnerability is weak when it is actually the cornerstone of strength. And once I figured that out, which again, I mean, I can't understate enough how much I had to learn and relearn this lesson, but I finally got it and it finally clicked. And that was simply that trust that is built. You know, think about the best boss you have ever worked for. I imagine there's someone who looked at you and said, man, I don't know the answer, or I need you, or gosh, I'm a little scared. This one is bigger than me. And you feel like you want to walk through broken glass for them. And what I have learned is when I am honest with my people and say, I'm the one in charge, but I will take anything you've got, any input you have, that trust fall has never led me wrong. And when I worked for bosses like that, man, I wanted to run through walls for them. And I think that's something that we miss as leaders, because we think that we have to put on this quote stereotype of what we think the CEO, you know, or the CFO or the board member or what have you, insert any title here, you know, is that we have to, you know, identify as that persona or that template. And that template is superimposed by social constructs. And when you are just yourself and you're honest with your people, man, I tell you, like I said, they'll walk through broken glass for you.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. Thank you. And from my perspective, I agree. I certainly can't speak to yours, but from my perspective, just being able to say, I don't know, I need your help. You know, what should we do here? The trust that that builds to then allow for people to execute in ways that you've illustrated for the last hour. It's the building blocks of the whole relationship.
Yeah, it's simple, but it's not easy, right? It's like when you look at that and what you just said, Michael, seems so easy. Gosh, just say when you don't know something, just ask for help. It is the most low-hanging fruit, right? And it is simple. It's so simple, but man, it's not easy for people to do. And we've got to change that.
Sure. And I do think the social constructs around it are probably the biggest reason why it's hard to do and the biggest reason why we need to change it. And unfortunately, right or wrong, I feel like the only way to change it is one person at a time. Like there's no magic wand that somebody's going to wave and say, okay, now it's cool to do this. Yeah. Everybody has to take that. And you talked about embracing risk before. It has to embrace that personal risk of saying, okay, I'm going to ask for help. Then we're going to see what happens.
Yeah. And by the way, you don't have to be the CEO of your organization. You know, at whatever corner of the world that you're in, whether you have a formal title or not, it doesn't matter. You can exhibit these skills with your colleagues. You know, help me. I don't know. You know, let's figure this out together. Best idea wins. This, you know, this is the culture that we want in our leaders to set at the top. But I understand, and this is what I hear, the biggest complaint from people is, this is all fine and good, but my CEO does not subscribe to empowerment. In fact, you know, he or she is autocratic, doesn't ask for input. Well, there are things that you can do to manage the space around you. And so, you know, you're not helpless and you're not a victim. And we fall so much into, you know, learned helplessness where, well, they suck. So, you know, my hands are tied. No, they're not. You know, the minute that you give yourself some power, that you can change and influence those around you, even, you know, if you're, you know, running a small group, a small team, or a big one, it doesn't matter. You can do this exactly from where you're standing.
That's such an amazing point. Nobody is helpless. People can choose to take on that victim mentality, but we can focus on the solution or we can focus on the problem. And just because there's something in our environment we don't like, and to be honest, maybe this isn't the right word to use, but oppressive bosses can be a pretty big negative impact on our lives. But there is something somewhere that we can still positively impact. And if we don't seek to find that out, we will allow ourselves to become consumed by that negativity instead of overcoming it or chipping away at it.
Exactly.
This has been amazing, Kristen. Thank you so much. So now I've seen you speak. I've got to have a conversation with you. I want to keep the conversation going, but I know that we're scheduling around your commitments today. So I know that there are plenty of other people that are listening to this saying, wait a minute, I need to hear more from her. So please take as much time as you want. Walk us through all of the things that you're working on right now, because I know there's multiple initiatives that you're involved with. Where can we find your book? Where can we connect with you online? Where can we learn more from you? Give us all of it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you. The thing that I'm doing these days and that I am loving is sharing these thoughts with people from a stage. I am loving delivering keynotes, and I deliver keynotes on empowerment, on optimizing optimism, and by optimizing performance through optimism, by preventing the unthinkable. And so this is, I'm living on a plane these days, but I am loving every second of it. So, you know, if you've got a conference or something, then you need a keynote speaker, I'm your man. Just go to kristenzeman.com, www.kristenzeman.com, and you can find all the things that I speak about there. And my book is available on Amazon. It's called Reimagining Blue. You know, I do a lot of consulting, but, you know, really sharing these lessons and gosh, the successes and failures throughout my career has brought me to this place in life where I think others can learn from those failures and successes. And so, you know, that is what I'm passionate about right now. So, you know, that's where you can find me.
Well, thank you. And I'll have all of those links in the show notes so people don't have to go hunting for them. They can just grab them right there and they're one click away from finding you. Thank you so much. Thank you for all of your dedication to the community, not only when you were in law enforcement, but now after everything you experienced. I mean, just the two examples you gave today, we didn't even get into COVID and everything you had to deal with that. But after navigating a mass shooting in COVID, you would have had more, just being a chief of police in general, you would have had every right to go off into the sunset. After having to navigate those two things, you have every right to be on the beach right now with your feet up, letting other people solve problems. But yet here you are living on an airplane, going around and continuing to give back and help all of us. So thank you so much for that. I appreciate everything you shared today and I look forward to staying in touch.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for stalking me in that hotel lobby. I am so grateful you did because it brought me here. So thank you so much.
No, I'm glad I saw you and we had a few minutes to talk. So take care, be safe, travel safe. I look forward seeing you soon. Kristen, thank you so much for a wonderful conversation. I truly appreciate all that you shared. I really enjoyed watching you present when we first met, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to have this conversation with you as well. Thank you for all that you're doing now, and of course, all that you've done for your community throughout your career. You shared so many great highlights. I don't know where to start recapping, but one of the things that has struck with me the most is the concept of it might not be your fault, but you're responsible. Such an important mindset shift. Speaking of mindset shifts, the ability to take a step back and ask, what am I missing? I think one of the most dangerous things we can ever do is feel like we've got it all figured out. So I love how you talked about how important it is to take a step back and think, wait a minute, what am I missing? And from a leadership perspective, from a parenting perspective, from a law enforcement perspective, how important it is to listen to the dog that doesn't bark. Very, very important considerations. Once again, thank you so much. And thank you to everybody that took the time to listen to this conversation today. We truly appreciate you being here week after week, joining us and hopefully continuing to learn so many lessons that apply not just to our professional lives, but to our personal lives as well. Thank you for being here. Before we go, let's thank our sponsors real quick. HumanTel, as always, if you're interested in understanding when people's emotions are changing and what that can mean for your relationships and conversations, head over to HumanTel.com. Read their research, check out their blogs, their articles, then choose the training that's right for you to develop the skill set necessary to understand when people's emotions are changing by accurately evaluating shifts in their facial expressions and nonverbal communication. When you do, enter the code INCLUSIVE25 for 25% off the training of your choice. Professional interviewers, head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. Explore all you need to know about the International Association of Interviewers. What does it take to join? What are the benefits? Where are the educational opportunities in person and online? How can you contribute and give back to the association? All that is there. That is also where you can get all your questions answered about the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. Who qualifies? How do you prepare for the exam? What can the designation mean for you and your career? All those questions and more are answered at certifiedinterviewer.com. And finally, while you're online, please head over to inclusive.com. That's where you can learn more about the programs our clients ask us to customize for their senior leadership teams, sales teams, HR teams, and more to teach them the strategic observation and persuasive communication techniques necessary to unlock hidden value in all of their high impact conversations. We always appreciate you being here week after week. Thank you. Before you go, please like the show, share the show, share your feedback with us, subscribe so you know when these are dropping every week. We really appreciate you being here. Thank you so much. Stay safe, take care of each other, and we'll see you next time.